everybody, welcome to CES 2015. It's the Android Central podcast. And if you thought we've done some crazy stuff before, I think we're going to maybe top it today. Welcome to the show. I'm Phil Nickenson. We are here in South Hall in Las Vegas, Nevada, just in case you don't know what state Las Vegas is in. And we have a pretty much a full crew, very much a new crew, a fun crew. Let's just go down the list, and we'll see if we can screw with Ken and if he can keep up with the lower thirds. You ready? Yo!
Gorgeous.
Thank you, sir. How's the beard? Does the beard look good?
That beard is gorgeous. If you weren't married...
Wow.
I am married. How about that? All right, Andrew Martinick. We all know Andrew.
Yes. Not part of the new crew, part of the...
You are part of the old crew.
Yes.
We brought Miriam Girard along with
everybody.
Us. Tank Girl, you know from how many... places over the years.
Mostly I think the podcasting has happened on my own blog and then on Engadget and then back on my own blog and various guest appearances, Twit, All About Android, your podcast.
We've known each other forever. You and I spent a week in Korea a couple years ago.
And it's like I think we were like roaming the floors all buggy eyed like 10 years ago.
And we're doing it now. So we brought Miriam with us.
Now we're jaded.
Yes. We brought Miriam with us to Vegas this year and she's doing an awesome job. Alex Doby.
Hey, everyone. Almost as old school as Phil.
And Russell Hawley, who is on day, what, 3 of your employment at Android Central?
Yeah. Great place to start.
Oh, wow.
I started when the new year started.
I had no idea.
Yeah. So Russell is official.
They
he's all
ours. Just put me in a box
ours,
and ship me out to Vegas.
Pretty much. So we're going to do a little podcast. We're going to do it live. We haven't really prepared any stories to talk about for any number of reasons. Not the least of which is we've spent the last couple hours working on this breaking story.
That's not an Android story.
I mean, it's really not. That's the funny thing.
The story is that it's not an Android
story. It is an Android story because we all thought it was Android Wear.
All right, let's not start with that story per se. Let's start with LG, though. That's who I really want to start at CES with because I kind of think, I'm not going to say they've run away with it, but they've probably
they
had
win the show.
Yeah, they've had the
like
best,
especially after this scoop.
And biggest news so far, the big one for them really is the LG G Flex 2. Alex has played with it. I've played with it. Miriam's played with it. Have you guys seen it yet?
Yeah, just a little bit.
I haven't really messed with it.
So, I mean, basically, it's a G Flex 2. It's a little. It's actually a little smaller than last year. When was the last time that happened?
It's more than just a sequel to the original G Flex. I think they've gone smaller. They've upgraded the internals. It's now very much a high-end phone in the way the original G Flex was kind of a little bit weirdly high-end, but not.
Yeah.
So you've got a 1080p display, you've got a Snapdragon 810, the new fastest chip from Qualcomm. And they've improved absolutely,
3 gigs
so you got the laser autofocus, you got a micro SD card slot. So basically...
higher resolution display.
So the thing is, it's interesting to me is that it turned out to be a flagship that's better than the G3 in many ways, except for maybe the display resolution.
Yeah, well, that's debatable. You have deeper blacks, more vivid colors on the plastic OLED display, but lower resolution. So, sure. I mean, the big deal about it as well is we've also got the flexible technology, the self-healing back. And they've also brought stuff in there to make it a little easier to keep it free of scratches, free of damage. The actual curve has been augmented to make it a little bit more sturdy. So, pretty much improvements across the board, and just an easier to sort of hold device from LG.
But again, the Flex is not an active part of the phone. You don't have to bend it to make a call or anything.
And it's actually a little bit more difficult to bend than the last one.
Yeah.
You know, it's called the G Flex, but the flexibility really is kind of almost like an extraneous thing, right?
Now, Alex and I have been arguing over this for a couple days now. Flamenco red.
I love it.
Yeah,
it's
awesome.
I love it.
You're coming around. His face is turning flamenco red.
No, not at all.
I have to say I'm pretty smitten with this phone. Like, to me, this is going to replace my G3, which is a phone I've used a lot. I am particularly excited because I think it looks really hot. And not just the color, the design. And it's interesting to me what LG said about the curve. Last time it was like, look, it can flex. This time it was more like, we did some stress analysis, and it actually is more rugged because of the curve spreads the force is better when it gets dropped, especially flat on. So, you know, that's one of the biggest damages to glass is when a phone falls like this. And apparently they can alleviate that somewhat with this design, which is news to me, and I think it's really interesting.
And they did some cool stuff with the glass. It's Gorilla Glass, but they basically took the glass, burned some special sauce into it, and made it even stronger on the edges. That's pretty awesome.
Yep.
And how long before they take that kind of technology and start, you know,
making it part of the, you know, their identity as a whole. You know?
I think it just started.
Yeah, you could see that in, you know, especially things like the self-healing back where they could really put that coating on just about anything. And the plastic OLED display, that's the same technology that they used in the G-Watch R.
G-Watch R used the plastic OLED that the original G-Flex had.
Oh, so I should say it's the same technology.
Same family. Technology.
So, you know, how long before the G-Flex family is kind of just no longer a thing, and it's, you know, this is everything LG does.
I think they're gonna keep the space differentiated, just so they have different products.
So, Dr.
But it's a good question.
Dr. Wu, whom I interviewed, said something really interesting because I was like, this seems to almost be a flagship worthy of replacing the G3. And he said, hold your horses.
Yeah.
And I said, whoa. And he said, well, actually, think of it as like the BMW analogy. You have like the 3 Series car. And then you have the Z3 Roadster. He's saying, think of the Kirby phone as the sporty, kind of sexier version of our regular phone. And I was like, I get it now.
I like it.
Which is cool, because the whole message from the original G-Flex was, it was almost like it was a science experiment. Like, it was a whole bunch of really cool ideas that were kind of cobbled together in a phone that, you know, while each one of the individual ideas was really cool, it never really felt like a complete thought when you held it and used it and did stuff with it. Whereas this really comes together as its own device.
It will be coming to, I think, 3 U.S. carriers we know of so far. Sprint, AT&T, and I want to say it was U.S. Cellular.
Yeah.
I don't think we have prices yet or specific availability, but it's coming.
It's going to be expensive, I feel.
Probably. But I'm really looking forward to trying it, I think.
Oh, I can't wait. This makes my day that something is going to come out before the GS6, before Mobile World Congress, in that order.
Now, it's CES, so we get a lot of washing machine talk and a lot of TV talk.
A lot of washing talk.
Phil and I were in pain, between LG and Samsung.
Yeah, they were almost sort of the same press conferences, just in reverse. And that's not to say the products are bad. I think some of the products are actually really exciting.
Really
it's just not what we do.
Samsung had chefs on stage to talk about
their
oven technology.
But let's get into the other crazy LG story, which just happened this afternoon. We started noticing, and I guess you were one of the first ones to notice too, that some executives had this crazy watch on.
So it started all at the
Audi.
The Audi press conference. They have a partnership with LG and a partnership with a lot of other companies. But we had an Audi executive show off this technology on stage as part of the integration with their car system. So you can control certain aspects of your vehicle using a smartwatch. And the smartwatch they showed was an LG-built device. And eventually, what we found today is
it looks like this really shiny, fancy G-Watch
R. It does. It looks a lot like the G-Watch R that I'm wearing right now.
Stopwatch buttons on it.
So the question is, what is it?
And there was nothing made about this being a new product. It was just like, this was a vessel for a demo.
It doesn't even really have a name.
Alex and I were standing there at the back of the Audi press car. It was packed. And we're like in a stupor of morning, barely caffeinated. And all of a sudden, we see this thing. I swear, we looked at each other and go, what the was that?
And it turns out, it's not Android Wear. Like, I think it was probably, I don't want to say anyone was lying to anyone, but I think it's probably just, we're not going to tell you it's not Android Wear. Yeah, it turns out it's running WebOS. It's running Open WebOS. Alex and I got to take a look at it this afternoon. It's so nice. It's got to be so expensive, too. But wow, it looks good.
This is going to be premium.
Really, really well done. But yeah, it's sort of skinned like LG phones are in the same color pattern, the same icons.
Yeah.
Looks really hot.
It looks really, really nice. I kind of want one. Was that alligator or was it ostrich?
I think it was just regular leather, but we got.
We don't want to harm any ostriches.
No. Yeah. That's not what we do.
Well, just a couple?
Maybe the alligators. They're mean.
You can eat alligator. Well, you can eat ostrich.
They harm themselves.
Ostrich.
I mean,
fair enough.
Take advantage.
But it is decidedly running WebOS. Either that or it's running Android and it says WebOS and it's running WebOS.
Yeah, it's very, very different to what you get on there.
And it has a radio built in.
Yeah.
It's a standalone product.
And a heart rate sensor on the back.
Heart rate sensor, stainless steel.
Which makes
sapphire
sense.
Crystal on the
well,
front.
It doesn't necessarily make sense, I guess. I don't know.
What it means is we're talking about premium materials with software we haven't seen before, which is a big deal.
Yeah.
We're going to be all over this.
It makes
even though it's just Android Central.
It makes me even more excited for smartwatches in general, LG smartwatches specifically.
And you know, what if this thing also works with iOS?
Crazier things have happened.
I mean,
it's possible.
Why not?
Yeah, crazier things have happened. In fact, we saw another smartwatch this week that does that from Alcatel.
Sure. Yep.
They just call it the Alcatel Watch, in all capital letters, by the way. So, watch!
Yeah.
And speaking of which, there's a nice segue here between between WebOS and Alcatel, because Alcatel, TCL, the parent company of Alcatel, has bought the name Palm.
Which WebOS Nation, our sister site, which is hanging on for dear life, and we're resurrecting it this week.
Well, clearly with that watch we
exclusively found out last week, yeah. So it's this crazy circle of smartphone life a little bit, I think.
It's pretty awesome.
So Alcatel has this smartwatch called the Watch. Works with Android, works with iOS. It's kind of cool. It's a little smaller than the Moto 360.
It's thinner and lighter as well.
Thinner and lighter.
Which is really nice.
It charges out of the band, which is weird. It's got like a full
like
USB
port. Fitness tracker does.
Yeah.
Which means
you can't change the band.
You can't change the band. You know, you can't even change their own bands. It's just part of the thing. And they're really calling this, you know, a smartwatch for more people. $150.
Yep.
No configuration options. Works with Android and iOS. You just install an app. It has apps built into it by default. There's no, you know, they're
app
saying
ecosystem.
There's no real, you know, ecosystem. So they're looking at that as a positive, I guess, because you take it out, it's just going to be, you know, it's an appliance kind of.
It's a dumb smartwatch.
Yeah, pretty
a little much. Bit. Didn't get too far into the software because it's not finished yet. It was a little janky.
Or a smart dumb watch?
Yeah, maybe. It's an interesting option for $150, and especially because it works with iOS and Android.
And we're going to see this happen as smartwatches really the you know the arena kind of gets moved around, and we see random WebOS watches or watches running Android but not Android Wear and things like that. You know, we're going to have these. You know, there are basic smartphones, there are super high-end smartphones, there are smartphones with weird software, weird stores and things like that. All that stuff is just going to come over to the watch side.
So we spent some time, you and I did, with Alcatel on Saturday, I guess, when we first got here.
Yeah.
And kind of the name of their game in 2015, hey, I got that right on the first try.
Wow.
Is going to be, it's still affordable, that's always been their thing,
yeah.
But it's also going to be LTE. So we saw a handful of new phones and tablets.
Yep.
Varying sizes.
The Pixie line comes in four sizes and three operating systems in all four sizes.
Now, let's back up, because those OSs aren't hot swappable. You're not going to boot into Android
it's
one day.
At the time of purchase, you choose which one you want.
It's Android, not WebOS.
Oh, gosh.
Android, Windows Phone, and Firefox.
Firefox.
Which I haven't used since the first dev.
And Firefox is best for that, the low-end 3.5-inch one. Super cheap. You know, it's probably going to run Firefox OS a lot better than it runs Android.
You know, if the bootloader is unlocked, I bet you it'll be really easy to switch over between OSs on that phone.
Could see that.
And that would be the right way to do it. You don't want normal people, having to choose between three OSs. And, you imagine the customer service situation you have to deal with. It'd be a nightmare.
And from Alcatel's point of view, they want the hardware to be the exact same. So, they can just flash it on the way out and, do this. But it's very interesting to see what Alcatel is doing. They're ready to just throw everything out there. They got four different lines, five phones in each line, and a bunch of tablets and all kinds of crazy stuff, and it's all really inexpensive.
We should talk about the Zenfone Zoom and the Desire A26 and the AKA.
Yes.
God, that thing is great.
I forgot about the AK. Is that it for Alcatel?
Yes.
The Pop 2. We saw the tablet, by the way, has a keyboard, kind of Asus-like. It's not bad.
Yep.
So the AKA, I've been waiting to see this thing forever. It's
great.
I've only seen it
from
in the Korean
LG,
press releases from LG. It has these eyes. It has a case that comes up, to about there on the display.
Kind of like this.
So, yeah. So the top of the display, you just see eyes right here.
And they have personalities.
They have personality.
Based on the color of the case.
They have four characters for these phones, and I think they're cute as hell. I love it. If you shake the phone, they get a little mad. If you take a call, they do something. If you're listening to music, they get little headphones on the eyes, which is kind of weird.
And they have little action figures that match the personalities, it's interesting.
I get that it's kind of a regional and ethnic thing a little bit. I mean, we just don't do phones here like that. We don't have fun with our devices like
that. We should have more fun.
We don't have as many Hello Kitty phones.
Yeah, I love seeing companies having fun with their products like that.
Adam and I went to the Griffin booth earlier because we were looking at cases in general, and the kids' cases were the thing that we were both like, oh my god, this is so cool. We want to get this. Because they're really awesome.
It's really neat.
Yeah.
What else?
Zoom,
what else have we seen?
Zoom.
Asus?
Asus Zenfone Zoom. So I'm really excited about this because I love cameras. But this is interesting because I had this conversation about how we could do optical zoom on a phone with Samsung about 3 years ago at Mobile World Congress, and exactly the way that ASUS has implemented the zoom on this phone is exactly what it's proposing. You know those flat cameras, like some of the really flat Sony point-and-shoots? The lens, the sensor is actually at the like at the bottom, and then there's a prism that goes through a zoom that's inside the camera, and then another prism to the lens. So the path of the light is into the lens, down through the zoom, and then down through the to the sensor, usually back into the sensor. And it's exactly what they've implemented.
So you don't have to be, have this big honking thing.
So you actually have a lens that moves. It's probably about this much of a distance, and it gives you optical zoom on a device that is really compact. And I thought Samsung would be the first ones to do that. And no, ASUS did with the Zenfone Zoom. So it's just a great phone all around. I'm really looking forward to playing with it in terms of imaging. It's a 13 megapixel OIS camera with an optical zoom. Don't drop it.
No.
Yeah, I bet you mechanically the thing's going to be more fragile than typical.
Don't
but you
even
know what?
Shake it roughly.
I think it'll be fine because those point shoots are pretty rugged. Yeah. But I think that it's just a great idea. It's about time somebody did it. Because you know that you can do the pure view way of doing zoom and it works quite well. But you know the traditional way, which is either with a telescopic lens like the K-Zoom from Samsung, or with this design, is another way.
It's just not the same when you're cropping down effectively, and that's all you're doing when you're super sampling. You're just cropping down from a larger image.
Anybody else excited about this, Andrew? No.
Not really. I mean, I think that it's a neat idea, but we still haven't seen manufacturers be able to strike that perfect balance between super crazy camera and it's still actually a phone. And Panasonic has their CM1 camera, which is, I say camera because it's 90% of the way to the camera with the phone on it.
Yeah.
The Galaxy K Zoom is kind of more in that more camera camp well. So I just have yet to see one that can, you know, this is imaging. You need hardware there. You know, you can't shrink it down that much. The sensor still has to be big. Lenses have to be big. You know, you need a bigger battery.
But I think it's exciting that somebody's taken what kind of these flat point shoots do and miniaturized it down to fit essentially a smartphone sensor that's just a standard 13 megapixel OIS sensor.
How is the UI? Because that's always been the sticking point for cameras.
It looks like more of a phone to me than the other one.
Are you talking about the ASUS?
ASUS. Talk about the ASUS.
How was Panasonic's?
Panasonic's was a camera interface. I mean, it has all of this. It has the same readout. Everything, all full manual controls. There's a focus ring on the outside that you can change the aperture and ISO. And you know, it's more complicated than the interface on my Olympus camera.
Yeah, it's very much a Lumix.
Yeah,
with a phone strap.
So,
on it.
So for
kind of like the K Zoom.
So for a kind of, I'm not going to call myself a novice photographer, but I'm not. You guys know me. I can barely take pictures. I don't like changing settings if I can avoid it. Is this?
Oh, it has a full auto mode.
So for
it would take
like
somebody that's more comfortable with using an actual camera, a point and shoot, than somebody who is only comfortable using a phone camera interface that is really basic.
Right.
Now, like you said, there's an auto mode. You can get a lot simpler interface, point and shoot. You know, you still have a physical shutter button and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, how many people are going to take
that? So I've seen the output from that phone, at least the European model. There's a few reviewers in the UK have reviewed it actually last month, just before the end of the month during the holidays. Mm. And wow, holy crap.
Like, so it's a 20 megapixel 1-inch sensor.
This is probably the best, if not better than the 1020, which so far for me was the reference in terms of imaging on phones.
Cool. Now, I've seen Russell playing with some fun stuff this week, including two things today. Pick what you want to start with and just run with it, man.
I've been all about strapping weird things to my face this week. It's been kind of fun. I have a weird kind of side passion for virtual reality stuff. I love playing with it as much as possible. I love the way Google Cardboard works and how we're starting to explore that kind of thing. Two different things that I saw this week. The first was actually an app running on Epson's Moverio BT200. Sean McCracken is the developer, and he basically created a digital wireframe of the press room that we were standing in so that I could put the glasses on and, through the glasses I could see the people that were in the room, but there was also a screen in front of me. And I think Moveria's screen is something like a 40-inch screen that is like arm's reach. And it basically was set up so that there were waypoints on the floor that I could walk to you know, through the crowd, and when I walked to those waypoints, it would activate, you know, a game that I could play or a screen that I could interact with, and it was really neat to, you know, to actually feel that instead of having to walk around with a screen in front of me, or like we've seen with Google's Project Tango, you know, walking around with the tablet out in front of you, right, and then being able to interact later. You know, he was able to map the room really on the fly, and is working on trying to make it so that, you know, users would be able to go, okay, my room looks like this, I have a couch over here, I have a TV over here, and have this kind of game world that he's working on, you know, just kind of map itself to whatever room you're in. And I just, the whole thing was just really cool.
Wow.
And then this morning we strapped, I guess we technically strapped an iPhone to your face, but this will also work with Android.
Yeah, the Pinch VR is, it takes, you know, instead of walking around, you basically would sit with this. It's a virtual desktop. So when I sat down, it was, you know, kind of the primary interface right in front of me, which had, you know, really almost like an Android tablet was floating in front of me, where I had, you know, Facebook and Skype and things like that, and I could reach out, and there were these rubber rings that were sitting on my fingers that had buttons, and I would reach out and click, you know, on one of those things, and it would load the application. But I could also, you know, turn my head to the left and to the right. And when I turned to the left, I had my Facebook wall was sitting there, were messages that came in, you know, and very much like my desktop at home, you know, I have a tri-monitor desktop at home. I can turn to the left and see the stuff that I have. It was that experience virtually, including the ability to just look down and see a keyboard that I could reach out and interact with. And, you know, when you've got two little buttons to do typing, you're obviously not going to be sending a whole lot of messages through a full QWERTY keyboard. But it was neat to have that ability. And you know, even if I was, you know, in an environment where I needed to see through what was going on, instead of taking the headset off, I could look up and tap the eyeball, and it would just activate the camera on the phone and let me see through.
It looked like a very different experience than you get with Samsung's Gear VR, which sort of immediately sucks you into whatever world you're in, whether it's Marvel. I've done that one. I did a Coldplay video.
And you're really not meant to walk around as much with
right.
either.
So I've actually talked to the Pinch VR people before the holidays, and what I like about it is that it's actually an iPhone case.
Yeah.
So the whole VR headset kind of folds in, like it's got little accordion-shaped like eye things. All folds into a case that doubles the thickness of your iPhone.
Oh yeah, and that's they had it set up so that you know, that he brought me cases for the Nexus 6 and for you know, some of the smaller versions of the iPhone, and you know, their whole goal is to support as many different device shapes as possible because it's all software. You know, it's head tracking stuff that's all done by the sensors on the phone, and the case just kind of unfolds so that they've got these really thin lenses that you know, contour to your face and let you see very much like Google Cardboard, where you hold the thing up and you can see things. So it was definitely, you know, happy VR nerd week for me so far.
And then this afternoon, I was going to say we had you crawling around on the floor. I don't know if we went that far, but you had the new Sphero down there.
Yeah, Ollie. Orbotics' Ollie thing. Sphero was really cool because it was this robotic ball that you could just kind of drive around and do whatever. And it really, I jokingly say that it was the best cat toy that I've ever owned, because I would just chase my cat with this thing, and it was hilarious. But Ollie is really more of something that, like, my son would take outside and run around like an RC car. You know, it's a pair of treads, you know, or, you know, carpet-friendly rollers that you can swap out. And it's a smartphone-controlled, you know, RC car, basically. But it gets up to, I think, 7 miles an hour. And has a pretty neat little trick mode where you turn the phone into landscape and can flip around and let it do just about everything.
Cool. Neat.
Which just makes it a more powerful, ridiculous cat
right,
toy.
Right. I
love
the tread on the wheels.
Now my cat can't run away. I can chase it and win.
What else have we seen this week? We haven't talked about Samsung, which is kind of unusual to go this
There's
long in a podcast
say.
And not talk. Well, we've got a couple new phones. What are the A3 and
the
A5?
The A3 and the A7.
They're not new, right? Technically, they were announced.
They were announced, but so, this is the first time we got to put our hands on them and see. You know, they have this same design language that they're using from the Galaxy Alpha and the Note 4. But these are
all metal, right?
The
back?
No, the back is not still, but it's non-removable. So it let them make these really thin and have larger batteries proportionally than the Alpha did, which the Alpha had kind of poor battery life. And they're inexpensive, depending, you know, it's hard to translate the prices because these are for Southeast Asia and India. But we're talking about all metal Samsung phones that are on the low end rather than just on the high end.
Cool.
And that's really cool. And they, you know, they lose the heart rate monitor, the finger scanner, stuff like that, of course. But they have, you know, quad core processors, 2 gigs of RAM, 1080p display. I mean, you know, pretty good specs. And, you know, Samsung has a lot of times cheaped out a lot to get the low end stuff, really low end.
Yeah.
And these are actually exciting because they're not in that trend.
HTC launched a phone here. Yes.
Yes.
The Desire H1.
Oh, yes. Wow.
You held it in your hands once.
I can't wait to watch this video. This look on my face is going to be great. I'm like, that was priceless. That phone. Yes,
no,
I mean, held that
you
phone.
You know, we brought up Samsung, and they didn't technically launch the phones, but we played with them.
No,
HTC actually launched the Desire 826, which is a Desire 820 improved. Mm-hmm. So the best way to describe it is 820 with a new octa-core version of the Qualcomm Snapdragon 615. This has Lollipop Native, which is great.
Android 5.0.2 was on it, actually.
Yeah.
So,
and,
really new.
Let's see what they do. They put an ultra-pixel camera for selfies with autofocus in the front, and a 13-megapixel autofocus in the rear. And in terms of design, it's an evolution of the design from the Eye, which is a smaller phone.
Looks like the Eye, just with a smaller front-facing camera.
And they've
camera.
Improved the display. Flat. It's 1080p, 5.5-inch versus the 720p from the previous Desire.
It's like the Eye, it's all plastic, and they have the cool double-color options.
Yeah, the Oreo, I call it.
Exactly.
No,
white and pink.
It's glossy.
Blue.
I like the matte finish.
There's
on the Eye.
There's two
versions. Oh, are there two?
Yeah.
Okay, so depending
on the color
you get.
The blue one is more matte.
That's
the white
correct.
Had to be
but they have a purple one, which I thought was really hot. But anyway, you know, it's nothing to write home about, but it's interesting to see that they're evolving the 8 Series Desire into almost like
this
butting
one's
into...
getting up there in specs.
I mean, 1080p, that 8-core processor, 2 gigs of RAM, micro SD. Nice.
A little bit more news from HTC this week. They didn't really announce this publicly or anything. I don't think it's a big secret. I had a meeting with them. And basically, we just kind of talked generally about what to expect in 2015. And it's going to be more of an extension of what we started to see with the re-camera. By the way, if you haven't seen it, over at the Fashion Mall, there are like 3 or 4 giant re-cameras set up. I need to go over there.
See if you can get one of those.
I'll throw it on my back. But basically, you're going to see more kinds of different products from them in 2015, including venturing into the home space somehow. And your guess is as good as mine at this point. I really have no idea what it is. And also,
as long as it's not light bulbs.
I wouldn't think so. That just doesn't sound like something they would do.
They have expanded their accessory, you know, lineup a little more with the boom bass speaker and keyboard covers and stuff like that. But we haven't seen
case, for instance.
We haven't seen them enter, you know, entirely new product category until they, you know, they came out with the re-camera.
And also entertainment was the other one. And
they said entertainment.
I don't know, you know, specifically what it's going to be. They're not going to start making movies. I imagine
HTC Pictures or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, who knows?
Happen.
So, really,
that's a big budget business.
Really interesting things from a company that's not trying to reinvent itself, and it's not going to stop making smartphones anytime soon. But
they do a great job making smartphones and tablets, and you kind of want that expertise in just hardware and software to come into other areas.
It's going to be really interesting to see what happens. And honestly, I don't know. I'm so curious.
Yeah, we're going to see an add-on to the re-camera that makes it a laser tag shooter.
Ooh.
So that everyone can play laser tag with the re-camera.
Or fit on an umbrella.
I keep using it to like tell people I'm going to erase their brain.
It's like the Men in Black thing.
The flashy thing,
exactly.
We should totally do that. What else? What are we forgetting? What weird stuff have you guys
seen
out there? Sony, yes.
Sony did a few things this week. We got a new metal version of the Smartwatch 3. We also got a bunch of new bands for that. It is so much better.
I put it up next to this, and I don't know.
I mean, you're still dealing with the same basic modular design, aren't you? Where you can swap in different kinds of straps.
I don't like the way the band attaches to the body. It's like that weird 80s cheap. It looks cheap to me.
Yeah, and the fact that it has to be modular gives it, you know, big honking bezels around the outside because it has to be able to, you know, be physically sound when you're popping this thing in and out. And that's nice because you can switch between a sport band and a metal band quickly without getting out your watch kit. But it kind of makes it a little clunky on the top, but it still looks great.
And it's still a big improvement on the look of the original Smartwatch 3, I think. So Sony was also all about Android TV this week. We had the announcement that they are going to have Android TV on all their 2015 Bravias, which is a huge deal. For the most part, you know, we know Android TV. We've seen it on the Nexus Player. It's the same basic UI. Sony's got a little bit more going on in terms of having an extra bar down below for accessing different kinds of content, something they had on earlier 2014 Bravias. For the most part, this is the experience that you know, Google Cast, you know, apps in the Play Store, all this entertainment stuff. Now, with a bit of extra Sony stuff on all these new TVs that are going to be coming out next
every
year.
Every Sony TV, right?
Every Bravia every this Bravia. Year. Yeah.
Right. And it's a big deal because, actually, this week Samsung said they're putting Tizen on every TV.
Tizen. Phil, Tizen.
I say Tizen.
And Panasonic is using Firefox OS.
Yes.
And all LG is using WebOS.
LG's went all out on WebOS, right? They said now that's what they're switching to?
Again, like we're hedging and saying Sony's putting Android TV on all its Bravia TVs. That's not to say you might not see Android TV on some other manufacturer. It would not surprise me to see that happen at some point this year. But this week, those are the announcements. And you kind of have the sides being drawn up. Yeah. I bet you see people cross over a little bit.
And Sharp is doing something interesting. They announced that they're going to have two full lines that will for sure use this Smart Central, they call it, which has Android TV as a component because Android TV is not... set up to really do all of the other TV stuff, like managing your inputs and your, you know, all that other kind of stuff. It's more a content delivery platform. But Sharp is going to have that. But not every one of their TVs is going to be Android TV because you go in and you just want to buy a 1080p 40-inch TV. There's not really the margin there for them to put in the hardware and let it run Android TV. But when you're looking at a 70-inch 4K TV, yeah, you better bet that that's going to have all the top-of-the-line stuff.
Sony's, you know, not just doing Android TV. This is, you know, it's a separate announcement that they're doing Android TV, but all of Sony's smart TVs are also PlayStation Now compatible, or at least they will when they start rolling that out, which is cool because you basically have a standalone television set that just does a remarkable spectrum of content because PlayStation Now is all of the PlayStation 3 titles and... We'll go back further, which they also announced has a streaming component to it now, like an all-you-can-stream thing. But then there's, you know, there's been a steady growth of content for Android TV. So it's going to be really interesting to see, you know, just unboxing a Sony TV and mounting it on your wall, you gain access to a lot of stuff.
Right, and hopefully that means that, you know, those kind of applications aren't super demanding hardware-wise, but also it means that there's going to have to be a good amount of storage and a decent processor in there, and that means that the entire experience is going to be way better than current smart TVs that can sometimes be a little slow and you know, not the best experience.
I know a lot's been said about the Samsung SUHD thing, and it's just kind of this ridiculous acronym, but Alex and I stood in front of it for like 5 minutes this afternoon just...
Yeah.
Wow, I mean, it's pretty impressive. And I don't know TV tech. That's not my thing. But
it looks
I say it every year, but wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of Android, Android Auto seems to be everywhere at the show. I got to play with the the Pioneer stuff, sorry. We saw that Kenwood, Parrot has a head unit.
Panasonic.
Panasonic.
So Audi.
It's everywhere. And that's good. And it's interesting to see that a lot of the aftermarket head units are both Apple CarPlay and Android Auto compatible, and many of them actually run Android with some kind of heavy skin themselves, so you know, yeah.
It's going to be interesting to see what happens. I think we only got one set of prices this week. It was from, I forget who it was from. Was it Panasonic?
Pioneer,
yeah, that's who it
pricing,
was.
Yeah.
And it started at $700 for their cheap one. That's, I mean, I get it's not a lot of money for a head unit. It's a lot of money for somebody who's really wanting to get into it, you know, especially when you take installation into it.
Sure.
And when you can get, you know, $100, $200.
I mean,
you know,
I think
the, do a lot of things
I can,
now.
The Parrot has announced pricing on theirs, but honestly, I think their head units seem to be... It's funny to say this because Kenwood and Pioneer have been doing this for decades, right? But I really feel that Parrot just nailed it. They do stuff that the other ones don't do at all. Like, you can interface to the CAN bus, the ODB port on your car, with the climate control, the rear parking sensors. So if your car is a newer car, you can actually get access to a whole bunch of stuff through an app, through several, like a climate app and a back parking view app. And they bundle their head unit with a dash cam that is connected via MHL to the head unit. And so you can record, you know, as you drive along. It's a kind of a differentiator. It's kind of unique.
It's going to be...
It's nice-looking software. I mean, like, wasn't... You know, when you think about connected car stuff, we have, like, you know, Androids... You know, the big name that you usually hear is Torque. And while Torque is really functional, it's really just not very pretty. Whereas the stuff that Parrot was doing, it looked really nice. The interfaces for all of that stuff was really nice.
And they even have an interface without, like, kind of, like, a lot of the stuff for Pioneer, for example, requires a third-party interface box to do all of this integrating with your own car stuff. But with Parrot, they actually have a pretty much standard connector that apparently works with most cars' steering wheel controls out of the box.
I worry a little bit. Alex and I spent some time at Hyundai's. And I worry about list views. Scrolling through list views while you're in a car is not a good idea.
The one complicated part about the Panasonic one was that you go into the media list and there's 15 podcasts and music apps, you know, streaming apps and whatever, and it's like, that's the one part of the interface where I said that's not very friendly. Well, voice control can be a hit or miss too.
They've been pimping. When we were at Pioneer, they were like, "Yeah, everything can be controlled by voice, and it's actually pretty good." It was Android Auto, so it's pretty good.
Voice control can be hit or miss in a lot of public spaces, but in the car, these auto manufacturers have gotten pretty good at audio stuff in the car.
That is a good point. The one thing that Panasonic said was that, you know, you don't even have to reach over and hit the voice button because it'll work with the voice action button on the steering wheel, and they often have, you know, good microphones right above the steering wheel or in the steering wheel itself. So hopefully that's going to fix some of the, you know, potential issue of sitting there scrolling on your head unit.
Yeah, like that.
I'm super excited for it. I mean, it's finally happening. My question is going to be, what do I get, and how much is it going to cost me? I mean, and how much do I want to spend in my 2005 Civic?
Well,
just
to
be able to listen to my music a little better.
You think about which manufacturers are going to have this as, you know, part of their premium package.
Sure,
something.
And that's a big deal. But I'm talking aftermarket. It's really going
to
be the big deal.
I don't even think that $700,000 sounds that expensive compared to what car manufacturers like to charge.
Right.
When you build the order, you know, that could be part of a $4,000 or $5,000 package that you can't get unless you, you know, get a car with a sunroof and 19-inch rims or something. You know.
Yeah, and I'm taking it out of context a little bit and treating it like a normal sort of tech product, which I guess you can't.
Right. It's a little bit of a different industry.
The thing I thought really was really interesting is that all these head units still are at their core head units, so they don't need a phone connected to them, like Android Auto or CarPlay, to operate. And to me, that's actually the flaw. I think I want to see a manufacturer basically just provide a remote display and controls, interface nicely with whatever basic functionality most cars have, costs $500. Most of the money goes into the display because Android Auto has requirements for the display resolution.
Yep.
And that's it. You need your phone to use it. You don't get the radio. You don't get CD.
You
don't get
sat
nav. You basically get...
Funny enough, we might see that in the lower end.
No, but I think that's what I'm saying. Yeah. It would make so much sense because your phone is always on you anyway.
Right.
You have to plug it in.
The Hyundai demo we were using was very much a Hyundai infotainment system that, oh, by the way, does Android Auto and CarPlay. And I want the opposite.
Yeah. I think that what you're going to see is that, especially in the early days, people are going to be taking what they already have and tagging it on and seeing how it does.
Yeah,
I'm going to root my car.
We talk about list views being a problem.
That's right.
Or you know, USB.
I installed
this
third-party thing in my car, and it's awesome.
Yeah.
Right until I start the car up.
I spent a little time yesterday with Blue. They're a Florida company, which is cool for me. They've got... Honestly, I don't remember how many phones.
A lot of new phones.
I mean, if you're a fan of relatively low-cost unlocked phones that you can buy directly,
easily accessible, they just sell them on Amazon. I think the Amazon channel.
Yeah.
Yep.
What are we forgetting? I feel like we're forgetting something big.
Somebody says I strongly dislike Android. I don't even know why they're in this chat room.
Yeah, why
right
are you
now.
Here? Well, we're glad you're here.
We like you anyway.
That's at least a nice way to say it. I mean, people have said it a lot meaner than that when they say they don't.
The Android Oven is back this year, though I don't think we haven't
gone to our yearly Android Oven update.
Yeah.
Well, supposedly it has wire integration now, so we'll have to look into that.
Wow.
Oh, there's the $1,120 Sony Walkman that runs Android 4.2.
Why?
Oh, I am totally into this.
Okay.
Why?
Explain, please.
First of all, it's gorgeously made.
Yeah,
the components that do the sound reproduction are the best you can get, which is part of what you pay a lot for. It's kind of running 4.2.
And that's Google Play, though.
But it has tons of storage, 128 gigs, and a micro SD card slot for another 128 gigs.
Incompatibility with their, you know, huge extra DAC and amp and crazy headphones.
Exactly, that's
if
the other thing. But you know, there's a tradition at Sony back in the day. Most of you weren't born. It's okay. with Walkman and Discman, where they had the premium, really high-end, $1,000-plus units that were made like bricks and sounded absolutely gorgeous. I'm really happy to see Sony go back to that. For a certain customer base, they're going to sell 20 of them, but whatever.
It very much sounded like somebody said, we need this high-end audio solution.
It is
what can we do? Look at it like that and not like an Android device that, by the way, is a Walkman.
You know the Pono device, the high-resolution player that came out? Honestly, the thing gives it a run for its money.
The one thing you can say, at least this one's not shaped like a triangle.
Yeah.
That, like the Pono is. That's kind of awkward.
This thing looks really classy. All the controls are on the edge, which was something that did traditionally
physical
with their,
controls
with their Walkman. They did that traditionally, had the controls on the edge like that. It really reminds me of the 90s and the 80s when Sony was at the top of their game, and it's nice to see them, you know, try to capitalize on that in some way, even if it's a very much a niche product.
I went and saw the Sega V Squared this morning, and this one kind of came out of nowhere, and somebody said, go see it. This 320 gigabyte phone.
Yeah, they emailed me about that a lot.
The background on them really quick, though, is that they made a phone previously that just
blew us away, like 4 years ago at CES, in fact.
Right, and then it just like never happened to be a good product in any way, shape, or form.
Well, it was vaporware.
Right, and well, because they were going to launch with Verizon, right?
Right.
And then we don't know why Verizon was just like, and then they randomly, their website just resurfaced and said that they were coming out with this other
phone. Well, because it got launched through Verizon's weird enterprise sub-silo thing.
I remember that.
And you could only ever buy it through that enterprise sub-silo thing, and it was a new thing for Verizon at the time, so like you had to have a special kind of account to even see it on the website, and then ordering it was a pain.
You said this was years ago.
So here's the deal. It's not a 320 gigabyte phone. You're not carrying around a hard drive that happens to have a phone on it. The gist is this. It's a 5-inch phone. This one was running, I think it was 444. I mean, it's not a bad phone. It's kind of a hacker's dream a little bit. It's very nexty, right? You can get it rooted.
Oh, my goodness.
Which is not really a good idea when you're doing all this SD card stuff. Yeah. You can, and go read the post. Jerry explains it far better than I can. You can boot from the SD card, which I know the modders out there love to be able to do. So you can do some really cool stuff with it. They moved the finger scanner biosensor thing to the side because they think that's just a better place to put it. And that's
fiber,
interesting.
Right,
Kevlar.
It's got
Kevlar. It's really light. It's IP7X, 21 megapixel camera. And wait for it, I'm getting to it, 2 micro SD card slots. So
plus
it's
internal storage.
64 gigabytes onboard storage, which is really good. That's awesome. And then up to two 128 gigabyte micro SD cards, which, boys and girls, equals 320.
Less when formatted.
So they did a nice job with the press release and getting people excited about this 320 gigabyte phone, which
it's not.
They
kept emailing me, and I put them on a, like, when I get time later this week kind of thing.
And they threw, like you said, everything but the kitchen sink inside.
Yeah, I mean,
to grab headlines.
I didn't sound all that excited about it when I wrote it up, and I was probably a little too far on that end of the spectrum, I tend to be from time to time. It's got a lot of stuff in there people are going to like, you know, depending on the price, but it's not a 320 gigabyte.
It's a super nerdy phone.
Yeah, that's what it is.
But it's, you know, it really does need to come with that warning. If you're buying a phone that comes rooted, you really need to be careful.
It comes rooted, and you can boot from the SD card.
You can do bad things with this.
Here's the thing, right? As usual, it's probably not... I mean, I know, obviously, you can put almost any ROM on this thing. But, I mean, realistically, you're not going to get the latest version running on this thing in a timely manner. You're still better off with a Nexus. Boom, I win.
And on that note...
I am done with this. I am done. Good day.
So, I mean, we can say we're done. Some of us still have like 2.5 days here.
Oh, yeah. We're not done. But
we're not done.
This podcast seems to be done.
I think we can wrap up the podcast on that note. No, we still have a couple days left. I don't think we're doing another podcast from here, so you're going to have to wait till next week to get us back. But we will be back, right? We will come back and do another show
Absolutely.
Next week and wrap up the things that we find after today. What is today? Wednesday?
Something like that.
Yes. Sure.
It's been a long week already. Yeah, we've got a lot of stuff going on. So thank you, Russell, for joining us on Podcast Live. Thank you, Miriam, for coming to Vegas and joining us here.
It's been an absolute pleasure to work with you guys this week.
And Andrew, Alex, you guys have done okay, too. Well, Somebody else we need to thank. Sure. Justin Duino is here.
Yes, Justin. And Ken.
Come up here and say hi.
And Ken, of course.
You don't have to be careful climbing up on
this
stage.
Come up here and lay across the table.
Yes, lay across the table. Which I think
not only
Ken said is the only way we can get a sixth person up here.
As well.
Justin, Ken, actually, speaking to my microphone.
Hello, guys.
Whisper sweet nothings. No, Justin's been helping out part-time. Justin has been helping us out part-time and lives nearby and came to Vegas to help us out. And he's doing a great job.
And is wearing Google Glass.
And is wearing Google
hardcore.
Glass.
Hardcore. Like, he has not taken it off. I've never seen Justin without Google Glass.
He's the second person I've seen this week with Google Glass, actually. So you're rocking it hardcore. That's
rocking
awesome.
It.
So thank you, Justin. Thank you to all you guys out there for watching. Thank you for everybody who's been watching CES Live all week. We are not done with that. I think I'm actually hosting tomorrow.
Yeah.
We're going Thursday and Friday, too, I imagine.
Yep.
So it's insane. So for everybody here in Vegas, thank you. We'll see you next time.
Thanks, guys.
See you later.